Radio. This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets. It's O-Behave with Arden Moore, the show that teaches you how to have harmony in the household with your pets. Join Arden as she travels coast to coast to help millions better understand why cats and dogs do what they do. Get the latest scoop on famous faces, their perfectly pampered pets, and who's walking who in Rin Tin Tinseltown. From famous pet experts and best-selling authors to television and movie stars, you'll get the latest buzz from wagging tongues and tails, garner great pet tips, and have a doggone fur-flying fun time. So get ready for the pause and applause as we unleash your O-Behave host, America's pet edutainer, Arden Moore.
Welcome to the O-Behave Show on Pet Life Radio. I'm your host, Arden Moore. O-Behave. Oh, my goodness. It is such an apt term for today. That's because our special guest is a pioneer in the field of animal behavior, and he's not 100. I promise you, he's very youthful. And he's going to be here. We're talking behavior, dogs, cats, zoo animals, and beyond. Please welcome to our show the founder of the Animal Behavior College, Stephen Applebaum. Welcome back to the show, Stephen.
Yeah, it's a pleasure to be back. Been too long.
I know. We've reversed. We got younger looking, right?
Since that's right.
The last time you've been on the show.
That's right.
Well, you know, ABC. It's as easy as ABC, Animal Behavior College. But it hasn't been easy. It's been challenging. But folks, we're with a person here who's very perseverant, and he's dedicated to all types of animals. And we're going to dive into who the heck Steve Applebaum is after we take this break. So you're going to like this, Steve. Everybody, sit, stay. We'll be right back.
Time for a pause. Four furry ones, actually. Sit and stay. O-Behave will be right back.
What's up, pet pals? Arden Moore here, your host of the O-Behave Show. Me? Wow. Did you know there's up to 100 million free roaming cats in the United States? And without spay or neuter, that number is only going to keep growing. Not only does spay neuter humanely reduce the community cat population, it keeps cats healthy. Scooter, the neuter cat, is on a mission to give cats an extra life by making it hip to be snipped. Hey, check them out. Go to givethem10.org. That's givethem10.org and help us make this a better world for cats.
Let's talk pets on PetLifeRadio.com. O-Behave is back with more tail-wagging ways to achieve harmony in the household with your pets. Now, back to your fetching host, America's pet edutainer, Arden Moore.
Welcome back to the O-Behave Show on Pet Life Radio. I'm your host, Arden Moore. Our special guest is a friend, and a friend to all of us and our pets, and his name is Stephen Applebaum. And you know it from Animal Behavior College. After the show, give us the website real quick before I forget.
Sure. It's animalbehaviorcollege.com.
So we're going to go back in time. We're in a time capsule. Is that all right, Steve? I brought popcorn.
You are.
Cool. All right. So we're going back in time, and you're in the United States Air Force, and somehow you're hooked up with dogs. What's going on?
It was a SP canine handler in the service. And this is a long time ago. I mean, obviously after we learned how to fly, but no. You know, it's funny you talk about the time machine. I know that everybody over the age of 50 will appreciate this. Whenever you're on, you know, you're on your computer and you're doing a drop down box where they're asking for your birthday and you have to keep scrolling before you get there.
Oh, yeah. I don't know anything about that. No, go ahead. Go for it.
Well, not you, of course. You're getting younger every year. I got into that because originally I was interested in a career in law enforcement. And it seemed to me that this would be a great way to segue and take my experience and apply it to hopefully getting a job in law enforcement. But what happened was, I realized that, look, people go into law enforcement for a whole host of different reasons. And I understood those reasons. There was a tremendous appeal for me, but I also realized that it wasn't going to be my path. I didn't want to do that for the next 20 or 30 years. even though I have a tremendous appreciation for what's done in law enforcement. But I had thousands of hours of dog experience, okay, which was sort of just an accident. I mean, when I went into service, it was post-Vietnam, but before the military became more of a popular destination. And so it was. I was just in a sort of weird window.
And where were you? Where did you grow up, Steve?
I'm originally from New York.
Okay.
Born in Brooklyn, grew up on Long Island. But my folks moved the family west when I was a teenager. So from the age of 14, we came to live in Southern California.
Okay.
And I can tell you that it was a very different place then. Now, I didn't grow up in this. When I was in New York, I didn't grow up, as I said, I was on Long Island. So it's not like I was in the city.
Right.
But New York was a lot different than LA.
A little
bit. It still is. Yeah. But so I did some growing up there, some growing up here. Anyway, when I got out of service, I had no idea what I was really going to do when I grew up. But I had all this dog experience and I figured, you know, I can train. Maybe I'll just come back to Southern California and see if I can make a living doing something that I was pretty good at and liked doing, which was training dogs. You know, is this a hobby? Is this something I can do part-time? Is this something I can do full-time? And so I did. I came back here and I started training. And I found within the first year that I had about all the business I could handle. In fact, within 2 years, I was starting to hire other trainers.
You went to Holly Wolf, didn't you?
I did go to Holly Wolf. Okay. Well, you know, it's funny. When I came back to LA, this was like late 80, early 1981. And there were, I connected with some motion picture animal trainers out here. And I liked the idea of it, of training for motion pictures. But the challenge I had with it was a kind of feast or famine existence. And they also, in order to get into that business, you typically had to do very long apprenticeships with these old guard trainers, where essentially you clean kennels and work basically for free. And I figured, you know what, I just spent 4 years doing that.
And you also had a salute a lot.
Yes. So, you know, one thing led to another, and I started my own business, and things kind of took off from there.
So let's keep going, because what I'm seeing in you is you realize you have a talent and an affinity for training, but it's one at a time. And we were getting into the age where people are using something called a computer, and people were starting to use distance learning and things like that. So how did you come up with the idea? I think I'm going to create a school, but not going to be brick and mortar.
That evolved gradually. I mean, first, when I first got into training as a civilian, the internet didn't exist, or if it did, it was, you know, part of DARPA or whatever. I mean, it certainly wasn't anything that civilians were using. Personal computers were still in the future. And so basically, when I set up my first business, it was all private lessons. After about 4 or 5 years of that, I recognized that I wanted to offer group classes for a couple of different reasons. First, because my private clients still needed me after 5 or 6 or 8 lessons, but they didn't need me privately.
Right.
Really, what they needed at that point was for me to keep my eye on them in a group class scenario. Plus, I knew that my market was limited in private lessons. Groups were less expensive. And this was just another thing I could offer my clients, as well as offer potentially another business. But I wasn't sure where to promote it. Most of my business was coming from veterinary referrals, and I didn't want to go back to the veterinary contacts that I had made, essentially promoting a business that was a fraction of the cost of my first one. So instead, I went to a pet store that had opened, and I presented them with what at the time was a novel concept, which was, I would like to do a class through your store. The first lesson's not going to be with the dogs. It's just going to be we called them owners back then, pet parents now. And essentially, the first lesson is going to be a lecture in which we discuss behavioral challenges, which is why most people wanted to come to group anyway, equipment they were going to need. And then after that, we would meet at a location outside of the store. They had never been approached this way. I wasn't selling the equipment. They were. The store was. And so this was tremendously successful. I was working with some independent pet stores, and they were bought out by a large pet chain that we've all heard of, Petco.
Well, yeah, let me interject. I think the date here, we're now back into the 90s now, 1994. I just want to kind of speed up a little bit. But so
eat it up.
You got Petco when it was wearing diapers. That's pretty
amazing.
Right.
That's right. They were interested in a one-shop stopping concept. I had this service. And so part of it was being in the right place at the right time. Part of it wasn't being smart enough to be scared.
I always like that. That's my mantra. I wasn't smart enough to know to be scared. That's a good mantra. I think I'm going to get a t-shirt that says that.
Yeah. You know, you kind of have to grab the opportunities, and sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. So by 1994, we signed a contract with Petco, initially for the state of California, but ultimately for their entire chain. The company expanded. At its peak, we had about 550 trainers in 44 states, but I had a problem. And the problem was I couldn't find trainers, not as many as I needed. And so that led me to conclude that the way around this was to grow my own. And that's how the school started. Now, by now, we're talking 1996, 97, the internet is becoming a thing. And so we create a distance learning program coupled with a hands-on component where the students actually, now in those days, we did it through the Petco stores because I still had that arrangement with them, but we quickly divested ourselves of that so that by the time Petco bought me out of my company and they took the program in home, which they still have, but it's theirs now and has been since 2004, the school was a completely separate entity, standalone.
I like
and
that.
The rest is history. So that's the short version of how this happened.
Everybody, we're speaking with Stephen Applebaum. He's the man, the genius behind Animal Behavior College. We're going to dive in a little bit deeper after we take this break. So, you know, sit, stay, or purr. We'll be right back.
Time for a walk on the red carpet, of course. All Behave will be back in a flash right after these messages.
Take a bite out of your competition. Advertise your business with an ad in Pet Life Radio podcasts and radio shows. There is no other pet-related media that is as large and reaches more pet parents and pet lovers than Pet Life Radio. With over 7 million monthly listeners, Pet Life Radio podcasts are available on all major podcast platforms. And our live radio stream goes out to over 250 million subscribers on iHeartRadio, Odyssey, TuneIn, and other streaming apps. For more information on how you can advertise on the number one pet podcast and radio network, visit PetLifeRadio.com/advertise today.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
Hi, this is Betty White, and I'm inviting you to tune in to the Obehave Show with Arden Moore on Pet Life Radio.
We're back from the lot. Just checked the paper, and we had a record showing at the box. The letterbox, that is. Now back to Obehave. Here's Arden.
Welcome back to the show. I'm your host, Arden Moore. I'm talking with my buddy, Steve Applebaum. I love how he shared the evolution of how a guy from the Air Force with dealing with handling dogs just kept going with the different decades and kept seeing this evolution. And you're kind of, because you were living in California, kind of riding the crest of a training wave, wouldn't you say?
Yes, absolutely. Attitudes and methods have changed over the last 40 years. But, you know, the idea that pets were a member of the family, that certainly was not considered a radical notion in 1980. You know, 1980, the early 80s into the 90s, that's not the 1880s. So, you know, although it certainly seems that way to some people when I make a reference to something and they say, well, I wasn't born yet.
We still love those youngsters.
Oh, yes. Yes. I love talking to somebody and talking very briefly. I remember having a person working in my office. I don't know, somehow we were talking about events of national prominence. And I asked her, okay, so what's the earliest event you remember? I know you don't remember the moonwalk. And she looks at me with this perfect, like, 23-year-old contempt. And she says, now this is like 15 years ago. And she says, Steve, I've seen Michael Jackson video.
Oh.
I swear.
Oh, all right. That's good. That's good. Well, that's okay. You can always be an ageless wonder. Take that, Michael Jackson and moon astronauts. So ABC, it's, you know, I love this is, I'm going to brag for you because you have built this and you have trained, is it over 30,000 people in different areas?
Yeah,
and you started off in dog training, but can I read this list real quick? Let me see. 7 core programs, dog training, service dog training, cat training, groom, pet grooming, veterinary assisting. Oh, this is my favorite. Last two are my favorite. Aquarium maintaining and zookeeper assisting. Wow. Tame and wild for 200. Steve, what made you branch off into all these areas?
Much of it was student and what we call prospect feedback.
Okay.
You know, I mean, we started the dog trainer program in 1998. I quickly realized that it had tremendous potential. We launched the veterinary assistant program in 2008, grooming in 2010. I really liked the idea of cat training because I'd been getting cat behavior questions since the 80s. And as people came to realize, hey, they're trainable, they're just trained differently and for different things. So we launched cat training. Then we did aquatics management.
When did you do the cat training? Do you remember?
I do. We started the cat training as a short-term program in 2011, but we got so much good feedback from it that we launched it as a main program. We just expanded it in 2016.
All right. Glug, glug. You got some aquarium. You got some fish. Get your koi on.
That's right. Yeah. You know, it's funny. When that was first presented to me, I didn't quite know what to make of that. I think my comment was, wait, we're going to train fish? What? But when I came to understand what it was, you know, and recognized that there is an absolute opportunity for people to not only start their own business, but if they want to work in a pet store, and that can be a great way to get experience, to have that knowledge makes them potentially very valuable employees.
So you're talking like saltwater, freshwater. Is there some little factoid you can share with everybody that might surprise people about aquarium maintenance?
The aquarium maintenance, I believe, is worth about $4.5 billion a year in this country, in the United States.
That's a lot of chum.
Yeah, it is. Although some people have a hard time considering them pets, I don't. I think they're wonderful. I believe that tropical fish are the most popular pet kept in the United States.
Wow.
Wow. You know, just because of the sheer numbers. I mean, you could have four or five fish in a tank at least. So
you can't have four or five Rottweilers in a tank. That just wouldn't make it. Yeah.
Four or five bassins.
All right. Here's the other one. This one really, I love this one. And you have now ventured into zookeeping assistant. And you actually, it's my understanding, I was trying to do my homework. You actually have a special scholarship in the name of the person, all of us, who's a friend to all of us, a real golden girl. Talk
yes.
about that, because I'm pretty curious about, you realized in the world of zoos, they need help.
Absolutely. And zoos and exotic animal rescues run into a similar problem that veterinary hospitals run into, that really animal-related businesses frequently run into, which is many people love the idea of working with animals, especially exotic animals, my gosh, but they don't recognize or they don't understand what's really involved. You know, in their mind's eye, they're going to be playing with a lion or something. And so you get a lot of volunteers, but once the reality, which is it can be difficult, at times dangerous, but often tedious work, it's wonderfully rewarding, but you need to go into this with eyes wide open and you need to have some basic understanding, safety protocols, basic knowledge of what you're dealing with. And so that program was designed for people that wanted to get into this as an entry level so that they weren't just wide-eyed volunteers.
I really like that because, you know, you don't go up to a puma and say, here, kitty, 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 right?
No. And yeah, I mean, sometimes people, it's not that their hearts aren't in the right place. They are. I mean, you've been in the animal industry long enough to know that people are in this in part because they're following their hearts. And that's fabulous. You also need to have a clear understanding of what you're getting into, because the more you understand that, the more likely you are to get a job or to be accepted as a volunteer. So we did this for that. Also, because we thought it would just be an extremely cool program.
Oh, thank you. I'm glad you said it like that. I mean, yeah. What do you think about the fact that you've never put yourself in a little corner? You've always kind of looked at other options. Is that something you inherited from your parents when you were in the Air Force? Where do you get this notion that, well, why don't we try this?
I'm good on some things and not as good on others. One of the things I'm good at is I am pretty good at analyzing trends.
Okay, good. So you're not wearing bell bottoms anymore, right?
Well, I get to say no on Zoom, and since you can only see me from the waist up, I'm not wearing bell bottoms. No, I mean, look, it is important if, as a business person, to be flexible enough to understand changes and trends.
Right.
I mean, had you told me 10 or 15 years ago that my company would have social media ambassadors, I would have looked at you strangely. But you evolve, or you don't. But if you don't, especially in business, you do run the risk of running into problems. So I've had a decent on that.
And I did want to get back to the scholarship name, because she's up in heaven. She's been on our show. She's in heaven. You better say her name.
Betty White was an inspiration to all of us. I also met her only once. Yeah, just a fabulous, fabulous human
being. I
like
that you named it in honor of her for the Zookeeper Scholarship. That's really well done. Well
played. With tremendous respect and appreciation. And you talk about a pioneer. I mean, she was talking about things 20, 30 years ago, 40 years ago even, that just weren't on a lot of people's radar. But she was consistent for a very long time. And we're very honored to live in her shadow, I think. She was wonderful.
So when you're not building this training fiefdom, including fish, people want to know, what do you do for fun? And I understand you got a favorite four-legger at home that is listening right now and needs to hear the name on the show.
Yes, Roy. Roy is the current Basset Hound. So my wife and I had two dogs before Roy: Truffles, who was also a Basset rescue, beautiful, beautiful dog, and Sam, a giant 100-pound lab, one of the most wonderful dogs I've ever had. And when they passed, Sam was 14, and Truffles tragically from cancer when she was 11, the house just seemed empty.
Yeah.
And so we went back up to Basset Rescue. There's one out here in Southern California in Acton, which is pretty surreal when you go up there.
I know where Acton is. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that's south of San Diego, North County, San Diego.
Yeah.
Yeah, so bottom line is we wound up with Roy. At the time, this is 2019, we had a half-formed notion of getting maybe a 2 or 3-year-old dog because we'd just done the old dog thing, and that it can be hard. But this 10-year-old Basset Hound came over and leaned on my leg, and somehow Roy wound up getting adopted at that point. And we've had him since. And now he's 15 and we're doing the old dog stuff again.
But you know, with Roy saying, "Hey, Dad, with age brings wisdom."
He does. He, you know what? Elderly dogs are, they can be challenging, but we wouldn't trade it for the world.
Exactly.
And you know, it's funny. When we're up there, you see in a lot of the rescues, a lot of senior dogs. And you realize nobody's going to adopt that. You know, everybody wants the youngsters. So, I mean, Roy has proven to be a fabulous dog.
What's the favorite thing you like about him? What's a Royism? What's something you go, "Hey, Shelley, I like this dog because"?
Well, Roy is highly intelligent. I love Truffles, but she wasn't the brightest tool in the shed, the sharpest
wasn't
tool
the brightest
in the
shed, Truffles in the field. Okay, that's all right.
Yeah, but Roy is extremely smart. And unlike a lot of Bassets who don't always care about pleasing you one way or the other, they're just distracted by their nose or whatever, Roy actually does really try. He's fundamentally a really good dog and a very sweet boy. And everybody loves him. It's so funny. I mean, he likes to bark at people through this fence. And people will come up to us all the time and go, "Oh, we love your dog." It's like, why? He's just barking at
him. Yeah, but he's got a Basset Hound bark. This isn't a Chihuahua. Yip, yip, yip. It's a roo.
Yeah, he's got a great hound dog. He's got a great hound dog bark. He's been a wonderful companion. Our 1.5-2-mile-a-day walks became 40-minute miles, which is really slow, became 40-minute half miles, and are now like 40-minute 2-block.
But that's okay, Dad. I know you've been
fine.
A jogger, but you got a 4-legged senior, and you're accommodating Roy, which is a good thing. So we're almost out of time. I can't believe it. We got to have you back. But what's a parting message you want to give all of us out there that are lucky to share our life with a pet or two, and the importance of knowing behavior and the importance of getting properly trained in schools like Animal Behavior College if you want to pursue a career?
Parting a nugget of wisdom for just...
Yes, give us a nugget of wisdom. Betty White from heaven is listening right now. I can promise you.
Love, patience, and understanding, which I realize are kind of eye-rolling cliches, but it's true. Patience, extremely important. I struggle with that sometimes. I know I'm not alone. I come from a place of love and from a place of understanding. Recognize that dogs and cats are intelligent, beings. They're not human beings. And it's important not to consider them as human beings, which doesn't mean you don't love them. It just means that they communicate differently. And since it's not likely they're going to be learning too much of our language, they'll learn some, okay? And they'll learn our body language. It's critically important for us to understand where they're coming from. That's true in dealing with behavioral challenges, in general communication, in teaching them to respond. Do it with kindness because you're going to be better off in the long run.
It is a conversation, whether it's verbal or nonverbal, you should always have with your pet. That's what I hear you're saying.
That's right.
It's not you
that
telling them.
That is absolutely right.
It's a conversation.
That's right. Sometimes you can tell them, but if you're going to do that, you need to do it in a way that it's most likely to be understood and understood positively by them. As far as people wanting to get involved in this as a career, yes, the pet industry is a huge and growing industry. It is about 60% larger than the toy business in the United States. It's massive. And there are numerous ways to get involved, whether you want to work with cats or dogs or be in veterinary or grooming or work in animal rescue or with exotics. There are lots of opportunities. You can certainly check out our school.
I like it.
And frankly, since the internet can be a scary but wonderful place, there is a ton of information out there, all of it true, of course. No, a ton of information out there about pet careers. You know, do your research, do your homework, invest your time before you invest your money, as the old saying goes. But if this is a passion, don't be afraid to follow it.
Well, that's your slogan, where animal lovers pursue animal careers. Did I do my homework?
Absolutely.
All right. Hey, my ageless amigo, it's so nice to see you, Steve Applebaum. I wish you the best, and I'm so glad you got to come on the show and keep doing what you're doing and play some 80s music when you want to relax. Is there a favorite 80s band?
It's 70s music.
Oh, my God. What's your favorite 70s band? Come on. I want to hear this.
No. Although, it's funny. My wife and I have a kind of running joke, which is, you know, we're seeing a lot of these old bands before they go away.
Yeah.
You know, we just saw the Eagles.
Oh, okay. All right. Hey, that's it for our show today. I want to, at this time, thank my special guest, Steve Applebaum. He is the founder of Animal Behavior College. I also want to do a shout out to my producer, Mark Winter. He's the executive producer of Pet Life Radio, the largest pet radio network on the planet. And humbly, you didn't know this maybe, Steve, but this show you're on, two things. Longest running weekly pet podcast in the planet since 2007.
Amazing.
Pat, I'm old. So is my producer. But also, FeedSpot voted our show number one of all pet podcasts for 2023.
I can understand why. You have a fabulous show. I am a listener. And I wish you the best of luck as well. And maybe we'll get together sometime sooner than it's been since the last time.
I know. All right. So everyone, until next time, this is your flea-free host, Arden Moore, delivering just two words to all you 2-, 3-, and 4-leggers out there. Oh, behave.
Coast to coast and around the world, it's All Behave with Arden Moore. Find out why cats and dogs do the things they do and get the latest buzz from wagging tongues and tails in Rin Tin Tinseltown. From famous pet experts and best-selling authors to television and movie stars, you'll get great tail-wagging pet tips and have a fur-flying fun time. All Behave with America's pet edutainer, Arden Moore. Every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.